We see you. We hear you. And we stand with you.
Welcome to Election Profit Makers, everybody. It's your guide to winning and losing money on political outcomes and current events. There's no need to sugarcoat it. There's no need to add a bunch of crazy comedy stuff about it. There's no need for me to play my little goofy keyboard. Let's just get right into it. Politics is serious business. And money, making money, is one of the most profound obligations that we have as citizens. So let's combine politics and money. This is no laughing matter. This is Election Profit Makers. My name is David. I'm using my real name, not some cutesy nickname, because I'm deadly serious about the practice of making money. And I'm joined on the line by John. Now, John's a bit of a goofball, but he can be serious when he wants to be. Right, John?
Yeah.
Okay. How are you, John?
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
I am really, really excited this week because you're coming to North Carolina in a day or so.
Uh-huh. I'm going to have a little visit.
Yeah. I get to see my buddy. The leaves are starting to show up on the trees. The weather has been perfect. It's March Madness. Joe Biden gave an incredible State of the Union. Some of his polling has rebounded. And Bitcoin has hit 71,000.
So
life is good.
God is in his heaven and all's right with the world, as we say, right?
Yes.
You're loving it. I can see you have a good glow to your face this week.
Yeah.
You don't have your traditional death pallor as you ponder the abyss. Things are looking up for you now. The crocuses are coming, right?
Yes.
John, let's begin our episode with some clarifications from previous episodes. At least one listener wrote in and was confused when you were talking about your new favorite right-wing comedian, Shane Gillis, and you said that Shane Gillis went to Elon. I think a couple people thought you meant that he went to Elon Musk.
Ugh,
but he went to quite a different Elon. So why don't you explain this?
No. Shane Gillis attended Elon University in North Carolina, which is my alma mater.
Right.
So when I was talking about him going to Elon, that's what I meant. Not Elon Musk.
Right. He went to your alma mater, which is why you love him. Also, thanks to all the Michigan people who wrote in, we were confused by Hamtramck, and obviously it's Hamtramck. So that was a rookie mistake on our part, trying to make sense of that pronunciation. This is one of those words that is not spelled exactly how it is pronounced, right?
Yeah.
Apologies to everyone in Hamtramck, Michigan.
I know. You're frustrated.
John, another big bit of news here as we blaze our way through the headlines. Rasmussen polling.
Rass,
one of your favorite pollsters, has been dropped from 538.com, the famous polling aggregator. What's up with losing the Rass? Doesn't this take you back to 2016 when this podcast was actually about betting on elections? Now I don't know what it's about.
I'm not saying that Rass was ever a great polling outfit, but it's become particularly partisan in the last few years. When I think Scott Rasmussen sold it to someone else.
Oh, did that happen?
Yeah, perhaps that's why they dropped it.
All right. So that's Rass. Now let's move to something that you have listed in the outline as OKC update. What is this about? OKC, Oklahoma City?
Okay, if you remember a few episodes back, we talked about the possibility in Oklahoma City, this developer came forth and proposed a skyscraper.
It's going to be like the tallest building in the world or something?
That's 1,750 feet tall. The next tallest building in Oklahoma City is the Devon Tower, which is around 800-some feet. Huge, crazy upgrade. And I said that would never happen because, of course, that's not going to happen.
Is it happening?
They have raised the money and they are moving forward.
They're really going to do it?
It looks like it's going to happen. These crazy guys in Oklahoma City are going to build this. Oh, and not only are they going to build it, but they've made it taller.
Tell me you donated money to this project. What do you mean they raised the money? Is this GoFundMe skyscraper?
So I think it's going to be 1790 now. They want to make it so it's taller than
the Freedom Tower. Wow.
So I think it's going to be the fifth tallest building in the world.
That's never going to happen.
I mean, this is yes in my backyard on steroids. Oklahoma City is just like, let's do this.
What do you mean this is yes in my backyard? What?
I mean, you know, there's just a lot of people, they don't want to build something like this.
Oh, YIMBY. You're talking about YIMBY.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. So.
Oklahoma City skyscraper. Let's look at this. Developer says he has secured financing to build the country's tallest skyscraper in Oklahoma City. God damn, this thing looks Chinese as hell. This looks like a total Shanghai special.
It's crazy. I mean, it will wreck their skyline, but
it looks.
It would be much nicer
ridiculous.
if they built 3 600 story.
But that's not the way the mind of man works, John. You must have a single erection, right?
God, it's so.
How do you feel about this?
I feel good about it.
You do?
I want to see it.
Okay.
It's sort of like, you know, like Las Vegas doing crazy things. At a certain point, you're just like, you know, only in Las Vegas. That's how it's going to be with Oklahoma City.
They're going to be saying only in Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Like, I think this would be very weird and disappointing and strange if they did it in a number of other cities. But why not? Why not just do it?
Why not just do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just do it.
All right.
Nike.
Hey, you're right.
Yeah.
Nike. Just do Nike. It, Nike. Think different, Apple. Coke is it, Coke. Built Ford tough, Ford.
Shouldn't it have been think differently?
Yeah, it always kind of drove me crazy. I wasn't offended by them using the images of Albert Einstein and Mahatma Gandhi to sell their computers, but saying think different instead of think differently was... It felt like a sort of enforced Silicon Valley, like, we don't really do grammar the way you stuffy people do grammar, right? It's kind of like, not to blow your mind, but we wear black turtlenecks when we give our shareholder presentations. We don't wear suits and ties because we started this company in our garage. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? Silicon Valley. You remember all that stuff? Silicon Valley?
I remember all that.
Computers?
Yeah. They started it in their garage. They had Steve Jobs. That's who started it, along with another guy.
Wozniak.
Mm-hmm. And then they brought in Guy Kawasaki. Remember him?
Nope.
Well, they did.
Okay. I believe you.
I actually talked to that guy on the phone once when I lived in New York. He called me. Because I own the domain name rules.com, and he wanted to buy it because he had written a book called Rules for Revolutionaries.
That's a Silicon Valley title right there.
That's right.
Did you sell it to him? Did you sell him the domain?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
I guess we just couldn't come up with an appropriate price.
Rules.com. Let me go to rules.com right now. Oh, this is looking pretty legit. Do you still own this?
Yes.
This looks so... Why?
It's just parked.
Completely free dating site. Free website. Dating meet online single. Rules.com.
Well, I don't put the ads there. Just that's AI. Just chooses whatever.
Let me click on one of these.
Look, it would be a great website if you were to start rules.com. Imagine a site that had
You've
the
been
rules
saying
for
that for
every game.
Years.
Okay,
You've
whatever.
Been talking about what if? What if? But that will never happen because it's just parked with these dating site links.
Moving on.
Rules. If it was a repository for all the rules in the world for every game on Earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Board games, sports, even on the unwritten rules of social mores. It could be that.
Laws.
Right. But it's not.
No.
How much money? Well, all right.
Oh, my God. Like maybe $6 a month.
That's how much you get from it now?
Yeah.
So looking back on it, do you wish you had sold it to him?
No. I'm sure back then I wouldn't have asked for more than like $20,000 or something.
But that's still more than you've made over the past 20 years on it, right?
Yeah.
So why not have done that? Because you're holding out for the bigger payday that will come someday in the future.
Yeah.
Right. When Bob Rules decides to start his fast food franchise and offers you $1 million for it. All right, enough about that. Let's talk about the State of the Union. Folks, last Thursday, that was the last time we recorded an episode. Biden had a State of the Union plan for that night. I wasn't going to watch it. I wasn't sure if John was going to watch it. I assumed disaster because I bought into society's lies about how Joe Biden is one step away from being comatose, an absolute wreck, a cadaver, a shell of his former self. I said I wouldn't watch the State of the Union because it would feel like watching a figure skater.
something would happen. They'd go up to do their jump and they would twist their ankle and fall on their butt. Well, 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 was Kid Midas wrong or was Kid Midas wrong? John, it sounds like the State of the Union went pretty well for old Joe.
Yeah, I think expectations were low. And so he definitely cleared his expectations. I was nervous, and he did have a few moments where he stumbled verbally, as he does on occasion. I thought it went a little long, but overall, it was great for Joe Biden.
He did a good job.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he did a really good job.
Trump accused him of using some type of stimulant or something, right? That might have been projection.
Trump might be right.
Cocaine City, Adderall City. What do you think?
I don't know what it was, but whatever it was, they had him on a pretty good dose. They need to remember what that dose was. You know, if he mixed some 5-hour energy with some Adderall, it worked for him.
Speaking of drugs and Donald Trump, there was an amazing article on Reuters and other sources, obviously, talking about the Trump White House pharmacy. John, would it surprise you to learn that during the Trump administration, the once highly regulated White House pharmacy, they have their own pharmacy, became something of a pill mill where people were getting prescriptions left and right? The White House medical unit during the Trump administration provided prescription drugs, including controlled substances, to ineligible staff and spent tens of thousands of dollars more on brand name drugs than what a generic equivalent would have cost, a Pentagon report shows. The unit, part of the White House military office, did not comply with federal government and Department of Defense guidelines, the report, which was released on January 8th, found. Ineligible staffers received free specialty care and surgery at military medical facilities and were provided with prescription drugs, including controlled substances, in violation of federal law, the report also found. Quote, the White House medical unit's pharmaceutical management practices ineffectively used DOD funds by obtaining brand name medications instead of generic equivalents and increasing the risk for the diversion of controlled substances, it said. The unit lacked effective controls to ensure compliance with safety standards, was not subject to oversight by military health systems leaders, and increased the risk to patient health and safety, the report said. The unit spent $46,500 from 2017 to 2019 on 8,900 unit doses of Ambien, a brand name sleeping medication, which was 174 times more than the $270 the generic equivalent would have cost for the same amount of doses. It spent $98,000 on Provigil, a brand name stimulant.
Provigil.
What is it?
Provigil.
Provigil. Oh, I like that. Provigil. Keeps you on your vigil, right? Mm-hmm. A brand name stimulant, 55 times more than the $1,800 that the generic equivalent would have. Opioid. Both drugs were dispersed without verifying patient identities. Opioids and sleeping medications were not properly accounted for and were tracked using error-filled or unreadable handwritten records. So this is from Reuters from January.
Was Ronnie Jackson running the pharmacy?
Yeah, man. And he got like demoted or something within the military because he was handed. Can you just imagine the scene? People come up to the White House pharmacy desk and say, man, I need some, give me the good stuff. And they're like, all right, well, we have this generic. They're like, no. I want the brand name one. Excuse me. I'm not going to have some wimpy generic drug.
I got no problem with that. Some of this generic stuff doesn't work as well.
Is that true? You just got to ask for it by name, by brand name?
I mean, your insurance company isn't necessarily going to pay for that. So, but if the scandal is it, that's not the scandal. They paid more for
the scandal is that White House staffers.
The scandal is that they were giving
they
out
say,
controlled
these
substances.
Fentanyl
to
was
people.
On the list of stuff. Fucking fentanyl.
Yeah.
Okay, the one group of people who can touch fentanyl without dying, the Trump White House, those people are blessed, man. None of them OD'd on fentanyl? Come on.
Well, that's shocking.
There's a lot of drugs going through the White House. So, of course, when Joe Biden has a good night, everyone on the right is like, it must be the drugs. It must be the drugs. And maybe it is the drugs. Maybe he got Provigil.
Look, that's a legal drug. There's nothing wrong with Joe Biden taking some Provigil.
Here we go. That's what I'm talking about. That's right. It's a legal drug. There's nothing. And also, the president has presidential drug immunity. That means they can take whatever drug they want.
Okay.
This is what Trump's going to argue in front of the Supreme Court.
Okay. So here's my question about the State of the Union. Afterwards, everybody came out and said, look at Biden. He's fine. He's got all this energy. He's strong. And we have nothing to worry about. he's going to be able to campaign fine.
Uh-huh.
I don't necessarily think so. I think he was fine, and I think he killed it for that hour and a half.
He had a very good night when it really mattered.
But I'm guessing that he was in bed for a couple of days afterwards.
It's like you, after you record this podcast, you always say that you have to crash for like 24 hours.
I got to lie down.
It takes so much out of you.
So, yeah, I still think he's got to pick his spots. But it was great that he was able to put it all together for this one thing. And probably when the campaign's going, he's not going to have another event like this. I guess probably at the DNC. But other than that, he's probably not going to have an event that takes this much energy.
He might not need to. All he had to do was curtail this idea that he was too old and he was out of it.
He looks old.
He is. He's old. He's fucking old.
I know, but he just looks so much older. All of the, I know it's not nice to talk about people's appearance, but as I think we've talked off the air before, Biden's whatever cosmetic work he's had done, which is his right, it's just made him look a little bit older.
They probably had long conversations about, is getting a facelift, is the weirdness of it going to be better in the long run than not having a facelift and just looking authentically old, looking authentically your age? You know what I mean?
Right.
And they probably did a Photoshop thing, or they probably did some kind of thing where they were like, here's what you would look like without it. Here's what you would look like with it. You know, they probably did so much. This is probably one of the, I would imagine that, let's assume he had a facelift. I'm using facelift as shorthand for whatever cosmetic surgery Biden has had.
Right.
Hair, the hair transplant, all that stuff. This is probably some of the most intensely researched cosmetic surgery ever done in terms of gaming it out.
But, I mean, if you look at pictures of him from 2012, his face is much fuller and droopier, and he looks a ton better.
Well, that's your opinion?
That's my opinion, and he's got – his skin is tighter now, but it's also bonier.
Ooh.
And more gaunt.
Well, let's get back to the speech.
The speech. Too long.
Okay, so you think it was too long. Do you think it was long in part so he could prove that he can just go and go and go, that he has the stamina?
No, I just think all these State of the Unions are really long. I mean, if you look at historically, this actually is one of the longest ones. It wasn't longer than Clinton's, and it was a little bit shorter than Trump's. But, I mean, Trump will just get up there and talk about nothing. So I don't. He's sort of an exception to the rule. But, you know, it was longer than Obama's. Democrats just sort of, they have this laundry list of things that they want to go through and mention each one of them. But when you have a candidate who could run out of steam at any moment or could start stuttering as he has this stutter, I think you're playing with fire the longer you go. It worked out.
It worked out. The polling improved like immediately.
Yeah.
On Predictit, Trump still leads Biden 48 cents to 46 cents.
The polling just doesn't mean anything at this point. It's basically now casting. It's telling you what's happening. It's not predictive yet.
So let's talk about the other speech of the night. Boy, this one got a lot of attention. I had never heard of this woman. Her name?
Katie Britt. She's a junior senator in Alabama.
She gave the rebuttal. I mean, where to begin?
We see you. We hear you, and we stand with you.
I would just say three words, John, much to consider. This woman who gave the rebuttal in her kitchen, I think for many people it was disconcerting. I didn't watch the State of the Union, but a couple days later I was like, I'm so tired of hearing about this fucking rebuttal. I'm just going to sit down and watch it. And I ate a breakfast sandwich and watched it. And I was truly lolling at times. There were many distressing things about this video. I noted two things from a policy standpoint or a Republican positioning standpoint that I thought were interesting. One was that she criticized Putin. The second was that she said that Republicans strongly supported nationwide access to IVF. I would encourage her to just make sure that those are actually her party platforms and make sure that that's true. Then she told this horrific story about this Mexican drug cartel gang rape that apparently happened under the Bush administration. She was trying to blame Biden for it or something.
Yeah. 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 I mean, even in real time watching that, my first thought was, she was like, never. This, can we have this happen in America? And I was thinking, like, did this happen in America? Maybe it did. Well, it turns out it didn't.
No.
And it didn't happen anytime recently either.
She has a daughter named Bennett and a son named Ridgeway, which is a fucking dope name, Ridgeway. That almost sounds like naming your son Skyline, you know? Ridgeway.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Ridgeway.
So let's talk about her performance. I think what people were reacting to was her hamminess and her incredible emotional volatility. You know, I was telling a friend, it was like going through a 20-year relationship in like 20 minutes. There were just so many emotional twists and turns. She would just turn on a dime. I thought initially that it was just bad acting. You know, it's what's called indicating. You know what indicating is?
No.
Indicating is if you're an actor and your character is supposed to be sad, that you just act sad. You perform sadness rather than actually like inhabiting the character and allowing whatever emotion to come out kind of organically or internally. It's like you put on a sad mask instead of letting the sadness come out of what you're feeling as the character. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like putting the cart before the horse. It's hamminess. It's like when people say that performance is hammy. That's what they can be talking about. You're indicating.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed to me that's what she was doing. Oh, she's just a bad actor. Like, she wants to be intense, but she doesn't have the wherewithal to have an authentic emotional response to all these extreme things she's talking about. So she just slaps on these layers and layers of pancake makeup of emotions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it wasn't just that. It's also very common performative mode for evangelical women. Evangelicals in general, preaching at megachurches, obviously go ham as fuck. But it's also for women to speak in these kind of breathy baby voice things is kind of a mode of communication for evangelical wives, especially, you know. I think that's what made it so disconcerting. It's like she would be talking about these horrific things and seem like she's on the brink of tears and then have this kind of like choked whispering. It was too much. I'm going to say it. It was too much. I almost couldn't handle it. It was so crazy. And it feels to me like one of those things that that it seems like I was reassured that it seemed to put off a lot of people. Like a lot of people are like, I don't like what this lady is doing.
Right. Even Republicans were turned off by it.
Which was kind of reassuring. On the other hand, I could imagine it being kind of like Trump, where it's like in 10 years, everybody, this will just be the new baseline for.
Oh my God.
For Republican communication. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because remember remember when Trump came on the scene, his golden escalator, talking about Mexicans, rapists, blah, 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 making fun of the disabled reporter from the Washington Post.
Yeah.
And people were like, there's no way this guy's going. And now it's just kind of like, yeah, it's kind of what people do now. And now you have this other generation, Matt Gaetz.
Yeah.
Santos, fucking, we had Madison Cawthorn in North Carolina. Like people just do that now. Like that's how you communicate a certain ideology or political identity. I could see this woman being the spearhead of this new evangelical whisper, indicating super hammy.
Maybe, but on the other hand, because there was so much pushback against it.
You think it'll be nipped in the bud?
Perhaps, but I agree with your overall point how things have generally changed. I mean, I think, speaking on that, it wasn't that long ago that it was absolutely shocking for someone to scream out and heckle during the State of the Union.
Yeah, it's another thing that's changed.
You know? You lie! What was that?
That was 2000... Was that Obama's... That wasn't his first State of the Union. I don't think it was 2000... I bet it was 2010 or 2011.
Yeah, something like that. And it was like, what? And now you're just like, how many people are going to scream out?
Marjorie Taylor Greene showed up wearing full MAGA regalia. She looked incredible at the State of the Union.
Yeah.
She looked like she had been in a parade. She had come straight from a parade. You know what I mean?
And apparently you're not allowed to wear a hat.
You're not supposed to wear campaign stuff inside the house. But
the sergeant at arms asked her to take it off.
Yeah, she took it off.
And she said, oh, okay, I'm
going
to do
that. Like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't understand that I will be certain to comply with these
rules.
She's
like, I'm not taking your shit. I'm not taking it off. You'll have to drag me out of here. And then she went on TV and bragged about how they asked her and how she didn't do it. And that's awesome.
So let me ask you a question about Katie Britt's kitchen set that she was in. This was another thing that people criticized her for about about doing her response in the kitchen because she said this is where families get together to discuss kitchen table issues.
Mm-hmm.
Although it seems to me that 80% of her conversation was about gang rape. It just wasn't like what I consider kitchen table issues are like the economy. Isn't that what that usually means?
Yeah.
She didn't really talk about the economy that much, did she?
No.
Whatever. She was in the kitchen and people said, oh, the kitchen looks fake. I believe it's her real kitchen.
It is her real kitchen.
I believe that they just cleaned up the kitchen. But this is the thing that was fucking freaking me out about this kitchen. This was another thing that made me feel like I was in the uncanny valley. Look at a screen cap of her performance, right? Or of her speech.
Right. I'm looking at one right now.
Okay. Look to the right of her.
Yeah.
Well, it's her left. It's our right.
Mm-hmm.
What is that thing behind her?
It's a kitchen island.
Okay. It took me so long to realize that was a kitchen island. I thought it was honestly like an AI glitch because look at the vertical slats on that kitchen island. That does not look real to me. That looks computer generated. Do you see what I'm looking at?
I agree with you. And when I saw, I did not see this in real time, but when I saw the Scarlett Johansson impersonation of her on Saturday Night Live, I noticed that as well. And I was like, oh, Saturday Night Live did a pretty good job, but I can tell that it's fake because of this island behind her.
There is something off with that kitchen.
But now
island.
That I'm seeing the real thing, it's like, oh, no, it looked kind of weird for the real Katie Britt.
This is what I want our listeners to do. Go look at the video of this rebuttal. If you haven't seen it yet, you owe it to yourself, especially if you're a high school theater kid. You need to see what dangers lie in store if you try to indicate on stage. Go look at this kitchen island and tell me if I'm crazy that it looks like it's not really there. We have to be careful now because of AI, John. We don't know what's real and what's not real. There is just something off with the way this was lit or something. We'll leave it at that. State of the Union summaries. John, does it make a difference?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's that much to gain from it, but there would have been a lot to lose had he done poorly.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It could have been much, 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 much worse.
Yeah. So if he sees a bump, that's great.
If he sees a bump, he's going to snort it and give another great speech.
Yeah. Ridgeway.
I sold 88 cents of Ron DeSantis no. I finally cashed out of my Ron DeSantis no shares for the Republican nom. I made $19. Trump is currently trading. I think he's still around 93 cents. He won't officially. When does Predict It decide that he has got the nomination? At the convention, right? So even if he gets enough delegates, and he might get enough delegates, I think, today, right? Aren't there some primaries today? I think it doesn't happen till the convention. Let me check the rules.
Right.
So that's good for me because I'm sure something amazing will happen. I think what's going to happen is the Supreme Court is going to issue an emergency ruling that says Donald Trump can't run for president and it must be executed at dawn and hung by his penis until dead. I have a feeling that that's going to happen.
Really?
I wish they had a market on that. Yeah. What if they said he was to be drowned in a pool of piss? What an extraordinary ruling that would be. That would truly be extraordinary, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, coming from anywhere, but coming from the
Supreme Court. Especially this Supreme Court, which is like so ideologically like compromised, you know? But it'd be like,
That would be so shocking.
Wouldn't it be, though?
It would probably be the most shocking thing that's ever happened in the history of the United States.
That's really game. Okay.
Think about it. It would be more shocking than January 6th.
The Supreme Court, you get a push alert. Right.
But it would be so.
You would get a push alert on your phone, and it said this: in an extraordinary move, the Supreme Court announces that Donald Trump must be executed via drowning in a bucket of urine. You would not believe what you were seeing.
No, you say, well, okay.
Somebody got hacked.
That's hilarious.
Right.
Somebody hacked the New York Times. And then you would go online, and then George Stephanopoulos would be tweeting the same thing.
Someone in the New York Times cybersecurity is about to lose their job, something like that, right?
And then reporters who cover the Supreme Court would literally have it written in hand. They were like, no, we actually have the ruling right here.
Everyone would assume it was a Russian, it was some kind of Russian thing, disinformation. They would have to have the Supreme Court come out on camera and say, it's really us. We really said this. This is not a hack. It's really us. Then people watching at home would be like, how do I know this isn't an AI generated video? Yeah. The Supreme Court would have to go on a whistle stop tour around America and show up in person.
A pistol stop.
A pistol stop tour. And say, this is really us. We really decided this. This is a 9-9. Even Clarence Thomas was like, yeah, I had to do it. He has to die in a bucket of piss. It would take so much work to convince people it was happening, that this was real. God, and would Trump be complaining very much on Truth Social? Can you imagine how much he would be complaining? It really would be. It really would be the most, what did you say, the most shocking thing in American history?
Yeah.
I'm going to write them a letter and just say, could you please just do this? I think it would be good. It would be good for the court's reputation. Oh, boy.
Yeah. What are we talking about?
Okay. North Carolina limelight update. Folks, it's North Carolina's time to shine. The 2024 election is all about North Carolina. Wilmington native and NC State graduate Laura Trump, who coincidentally is Donald Trump's daughter-in-law, is now the co-chair of the Republican National Committee, along with Michael Whatley, who was North Carolina's former GOP chair. John, it doesn't get any better than this. They are already slashing staff to reduce costs. They're going to funnel so much money into Laura Trump's father-in-law's legal coffers.
I mean, they kind of need to.
Yeah, man. This is amazing stuff. Wilmington, represent. NC State, represent.
You got to take care of the nominee. And if the nominee is in legal trouble, if Biden was in this much legal trouble,
the DNC would be funding him.
Yeah.
I think they're also moving the RNC headquarters to Florida, right? To be closer to Trump's center of gravity.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Really good stuff. In other North Carolina news, after last week's primaries, a lot of America, as we mentioned, is waking up to Mark Robinson, North Carolina's crazed lieutenant governor. Alex Jones is now praising Mark Robinson. And Josh Stein is fundraising off that praise. Did you know that?
No.
Mark Robinson had some speech at CPAC where he was like, gay people are, we got to get rid of the gay people and we got to get rid of the lefties and we got to kill everybody who's not like us. And then Alex Jones retweeted it and said, this is the future. This is what everyone wants. Josh Stein started fundraising off that. So Mark Robinson's profile on the up and up. Martin Luther King Jr. on White House pharmacy steroids, as Donald Trump once called him. Provigil.
Provigil, yes. That, Provigil. I think fighter pilots take it to stay awake.
Right. And Mark Robinson is a fighter pilot for the American way. Is that a good slogan? I'm going to send that to him. I'm going to send him a bumper sticker. John, do you want to do a UNC basketball update? There was a big game.
Oh, there was an amazing game. Carolina and Duke played for the second time this year, and it was the 50th time that the two programs have met when they're both ranked in the top 10. Everyone was picking Duke to win this game. I didn't make a prediction, but certainly in my mind, that is what I was thinking would happen. Carolina led from start to finish, and in the two games this season, Duke has led for a combined 16 seconds. So Carolina has pretty much dominated this Duke team that was preseason number 2 in the country. Good for them. Carolina wins the ACC regular season outright. It's 33rd ACC regular season title, which is 46% of all ACC seasons. And Hubert Davis has been named ACC Coach of the Year.
God is good. Power of prayer. Hubert Davis.
Yeah. Carolina's ranked number 4 in the country heading into the ACC tournament in Washington. And this is my most favorite time of year. I love it.
Hollywood update. The Academy Awards happened on Sunday. It was truly Hollywood's night to shine. I saw two movies recently. One of them I cannot recommend. That movie is called Drive Away Dolls. One movie I can recommend. I fucking love this movie and I did not expect to. It's called Problemista. I was crying by the end of this movie. This movie was so freaking good. I give it a very, very high recommendation. That's the Hollywood Update. Thanks for listening. Listener questions. John, do you remember something we were doing a while ago called the Bumper Sticker Diaries?
I do remember that. Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Tales from the Open Road, from America's Highways and Byways. Bumper stickers, the messages they communicated to other drivers. Well, we thought the bumper stickers were behind us, but Jude wrote in with something that was crazy enough we decided to include it. This is not your grandmother's bumper sticker diaries. Jude writes, apparently bumper stickers just won't cut it anymore. I thought with all the talk about bumper stickers and whiteboards on the highways that you might be amused by this. Well, did we talk about whiteboards?
Oh, yeah, we did talk about whiteboards because somebody held one up.
Oh, right. Okay. Yep.
In Pennsylvania. Remember, it was a story that seemed a little suspect.
Someone had a John Kerry bumper sticker. And this person said that somebody drove by them and said, you're an asshat, right? Wasn't that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Something didn't sit right with me about that story. Anyway, so Jude writes in and sends this photo. Says, you might be amused by this photo that I just took while I was filling up on gas in Kirkland, Washington, just outside of Seattle. Folks, this is a whiteboard bumper sticker. The vehicle is like a white Ford SUV or van or something.
Mm-hmm.
And on the rear door, like the swing open door, what do you call those, bay doors? Or you know what I'm talking about? What do you call the kinds of...
Yeah, good. Know? Bay doors.
Yeah.
That's right.
The owner of the vehicle has affixed a large whiteboard on which they have written every comma, single comma, criminal, illegal alien must be deported today before our country collapses like Venezuela 2.0.
Period.
Yep.
They did decent punctuation.
It's okay. You don't need that first comma, but I do understand this is a whiteboard message. This is not a bumper sticker message. I don't think this could fit on a bumper sticker, right? And this whiteboard is so big.
Sure, it could. It could fit on a bumper sticker.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be able to read it. This you can read from a distance because this is a large whiteboard. Skyline Poems was another recurring theme on episodes gone by, and we have an update on Skyline Poems.
Yeah, James writes in. He says, I offer you the work of William Blake. In Jerusalem, we hear the contrasting. Why do I never know how to say that word?
It's contrasting.
The contrasting skylines offered in Great Britain of both mountains and hills, as well as our dark satanic mills.
Do you know this, John Blake's Jerusalem?
Do you know it?
Yeah, from church. It's a hymn.
All right, do you want to read it?
Is this not a method? I guess this wouldn't be a Methodist hymn, right?
No.
You've never heard this?
Methodist. No.
And did those feet in ancient time walk upon England's mountains green? And was... Yeah, it's nice. You can read it. Read it in poem form.
And did those feet... In ancient time, walk upon England's mountains green. And was the holy Lamb of God on England's pleasant pastures seen? And did the countenance divine shine forth upon our clouded hills? And was Jerusalem builded here among these dark satanic mills? Bring me my bow of burning gold. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear, O clouds unfold. Bring me my chariot of fire. I will not cease from mental fight, nor shall my sword sleep in my hand, till we have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land.
Nice reading. Classic poem from the visionary, from the British visionary, William Blake.
And so it is a hymn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I definitely don't recognize the tune.
Like a lot of Anglican or Episcopalian hymns, I think the tune is based on an old folk melody that was then arranged to have this poem.
Well, he continues. He says, I write to you from Manchester, whose modern skyline holds all the country's tallest skyscrapers outside of London. which are woven between old mill buildings and chimneys and flanked by incredible hills. Bonus points for satanic infrastructure and getting a mention of Jerusalem on the podcast without reference to current geopolitical crises.
Dark satanic mills.
And hail Satan.
I guess this counts as a Skyline poem.
Yeah, I think so.
Have you ever been to England? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Manchester?
No, I have not been to Manchester.
I haven't either.
London. Piccadilly Circus.
Is Manchester where the Bath. Is that where the Beatles are from, Manchester?
Liverpool. That's where they're from.
That was like talking to Ringo Starr all of a sudden. That was amazing.
Yeah. I think that's where they're from, Liverpool.
Do you know what they call people from Manchester? It's really crazy. It's really fucked up.
Manchestites.
No, it's Mancunians, I think. Normal. We haven't done listener questions in a bit, and so we're getting caught up on our listener questions, and so we're referring to things in the past. I hope that listeners are not too discombobulated and disconcerted. But Dom writes in asking about John's aphantasia, which is John's medical condition shared by many of our listeners where he cannot picture things. Is that what it is?
Something like that.
You can't picture an apple.
Not real well.
So when the guy says, don't think of an elephant, you're like, don't worry, I wasn't planning on it. Okay.
Yes.
Dom says, I'm genuinely wanting to know how John is able to have such specific and immediate recall regarding global Skyline rankings if he can't picture them mentally. How is he doing this? Well, John, like Manchester, you have so much to answer for.
Well, you don't picture a visual image when you're talking about rankings. They're just numbers. It's just data.
Okay, but how do you picture skylines in your mind when we're talking about a skyline and you're like, oh yeah, the Singapore skyline is so awesome. It's so muscular or whatever.
Yeah, I'm picturing something, but it's...
Picture the Charlotte skyline right now. Do it. Picture it in your mind.
Okay.
Close your eyes and picture it. I'm serious.
Okay.
Charlotte skyline. Tell me what you see. Not what you know is there statistically, but what you actually see in your mind.
Okay, I'm visualizing it from the west side.
Okay.
Looking east near the John Belk Freeway, I-277. And I see the Carolina Panthers Stadium. And see, I can do it. I can do it, but this is probably just based on a photograph that I've seen.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's okay.
So that's what I'm saying.
So what's what is this? You don't have a condition. What's this condition?
Yeah, maybe I don't have it. It's all on a spectrum. I think there are certain abstract things that I have trouble visualizing.
Like what, the original example was an apple.
Yes,
and you
an
said
apple.
You saw a gray blob. Now come on, put your back into it. You can't.
Yeah, I just think of a concept of an apple. I don't really think of an apple. I'm just like an apple.
But if someone said, close your eyes and imagine an apple, you could imagine an apple, right?
Yeah, but then if you were asking me to tell me what I'm seeing, I'm sort of filling in those details. Those details aren't really there. I'm not sure the details of the Charlotte skyline were really there before you said, tell me what you're seeing. At that point, I started to paint and build a picture.
Right, yeah. That's what I do.
It wasn't really there before.
What do you mean it wasn't really there?
Well, I think some people are like, okay, describe the apple. And the apple that they have in their head, they can describe exactly where it's sitting and what it's on. That just came to their mind's eye.
You don't see anything that's not prompted specifically by your...
I don't believe so. But I mean, it's like everything. It's complicated. I mean, I can see things.
Mm.
But if you're asking me to paint this picture in my head, it's more difficult.
Okay. I'm not sure I follow. We'll continue this conversation in future episodes.
Yeah.
Dom continues. He switches from aphantasia to Austin, Texas. He says, unrelated, I can confirm everything that listener Ed had to say about Austin. Now, John, you'll remember that Ed was an Austinite who was about to relocate to Philadelphia, and he wrote in to say, Thank you, David Kid Midas, for speaking the truth on how crummy Austin is and how overhyped Austin is. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Dom says, I can confirm everything that listener Ed has to say about Austin. I've been living here in Austin for 13 years, and the city has lost its way for all the reasons Ed stated and more. I'm currently looking for an escape route, but I'm taking my time because many places are also horrible these days.
See, I don't understand. How does a city in 13 years? So when he moved there 13 years ago, everything was great. But now all those coffee shops that he went to 13 years ago, they don't exist. And they've been replaced with what?
I don't think he mentioned in 13 years. Come on. All it takes is Joe Rogan moving his podcasting and comedy empire into town. It's going to be different. The vibes are going to be different.
I mean, I think 13 years later, there's probably some things in the city that he doesn't quite like, and the traffic's a little worse.
Wow.
But I mean, I don't know why I'm defending Austin.
I love this. I know why you're defending Austin.
Has the culture completely changed in 13 years?
Well, it's probably a combination of the culture changing and then Dom being 13 years older than he was when he moved to Austin.
That's what it is.
But
Dom has changed way more than Austin has changed.
Well, we don't know Dom, and we can't speak to the changes that he may have gone through. But I could also see Austin going through huge changes. You cannot sit here and say that 13 years isn't a long enough stretch for a town like Austin to seriously change and have a different vibe. That can definitely happen in 13 years. That can happen overnight.
I don't think it can happen overnight in a city that size. I think if you live in a suburban city, say, you know, take the Triangle, for example.
Okay.
Say you live in Apex and a population is 12,000. And then over 13 years, it's now 50,000.
Yeah, you could. That's a huge change.
That's different.
Yeah.
That's a huge change. Yeah. But I mean, Austin has grown 20%. It's the fastest growing city in America, but it's still only 20% different.
But that's population numbers. He's talking about the vibe. He's talking about like the mood, the tone, the sensibility, the aesthetic, the creative economy.
Right.
You know, the values, all that stuff.
I think all of our values have changed everywhere in the
last
13 years.
Holy fuck. I cannot do this. Are you serious? You really think that?
I think it's possible.
Whew. All right. Well, let's continue this Austin discourse because Brian wrote in, another listener wrote in response to Ed, and he was pretty happy. You want to read this guy?
Okay. Brian writes in.
All right.
Is this his title, The Battle of Austin?
No, I put that there because we've been getting some. Okay. We have some attackers and some defenders in Austin right now. This like that new Alex Garland movie that's about to come out about an American Civil War. We're living it right now with Austin.
I'm writing you as a fifth generation Austinite whose great grandfather came here from Sweden in the 1850s and brought along his father. So including my nephew, we've got seven generations here, and this city is still effing great. I don't give a shit what Ed or John says.
Wowie zowie. And also, I want the listeners to know, he didn't say still effing great. He actually spelled out the word that begins with an F that John won't say because his parents listen to the podcast.
Okay.
But I think you guys know what the word is.
He continues, life is 99% perspective, and I'd like to offer a different take. I've been working on the same block for 22 years as a furniture maker, sculptor, and artist, and have a thriving art gallery and vibrant artist-run community space where we host experimental, local, and international performers, stand-up, comedy, theater, and full slate of art shows and artist talks.
Oh my God, this guy's presenting his bona fides.
Seriously.
He's pummeling us with his Keep Austin Weird bona fides.
Oh my God.
Look at this next sentence. This is like something I would say.
This guy's a character. Yeah. I ride only a bicycle and have many beautiful friends, and this city is only getting more vibrant and cultural as people move here.
Oh my God.
There's better architecture, parks, really? Texas has parks?
Ouch.
Okay. Parks, libraries, and the food scene is off the chain. There's always great music and theater performances constantly, and so as an artist, I think it's a great place to be, even if it has gotten more expensive. If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen, Ed.
Now, let me speak up in Ed's defense. Ed is very explicitly trying to get out of the kitchen. We know that. He said that. He said he's moving to Philadelphia.
And this guy's saying because he can't take the heat.
Yeah.
Every place is expensive these days that's decent to live in. And I am a fan of competition, which won't be going away anytime soon. Long live Doug's. Who's Doug Sam?
John, I don't know. I don't live in Austin. I have no interest in this town.
Okay, long live Doug Sam, Willie Nelson, the big boys, and so much more. I could go on with how much brighter Austin has made a generally crummy state with the exception of Big Bend National Park and West Texas. People like Ed who leave the city aren't helping.
Oh.
There's lots of liberal people that still live here and will be fighting the good fight. My father was a redneck union pipe fitter and yellow dog Democrat who was never turned by the Republican wave of W.
That's probably George W. Bush is who he's referring
to. That's right. And I was very grateful for that. This extreme crazy swing to the right for the Republican Party is a national issue. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Austin.
Hmm.
They just happened to be moving here. But it didn't start in Austin. It started in the Midwest and Michigan and places like that more than Texas, in my opinion. I've had Ann Richards, the last Democratic governor of Texas, through my studio during a studio tour over 20 years ago, and it was a proud moment. There's lots of common sense people here, and it will swing back the other way.
Mm.
It's just a pendulum, like many things in life.
Hmm.
Love you guys. I listen every week. Thanks for all you do. It's one of my favorite podcasts. I got to agree with this guy. I got to agree with this guy because I feel a lot of the same stuff here in North Carolina and in the Triangle. People are like, why is North Carolina, you know, so many people are moving here and yet it continues to be right on the edge and still just a little bit red. And I'm like, a lot of these are just retirees from upstate New York, from Michigan, places like that. And they're coming here and they're buying beach houses and things of that nature. And they're fairly conservative. So I see what this guy's saying.
I don't think the conservative libertarian bent that tried and true blue Austinites are worried about is coming from retirees moving to Austin. I think it's like industries moving to Austin. That's a professional class, a younger group of people. I think it's different.
Yeah, I do think there's a bigger tech piece to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're bad.
So Ed is like, I'm tired of this place.
I think that Brian is saying that a lot of this stuff is happening many other places as well.
That might be true, but I'm going to stubbornly stay. I'm going to stay on the side of Ed. I'm team Ed. I think when Ed moves to Philadelphia, he will not. I mean, who knows? Because now he will be the newcomer to Philly. But I have a feeling that Philly hasn't changed as much in the past 13 years as Austin has. I do think there is something unique to Austin. Maybe not uniquely unique to Austin, but specific to Austin. I don't think you can say, yeah, this guy's complaining that Austin's changing. Every place is changing. Whatever. Austin is great. I mean, this guy makes a good case for Austin, funky stuff, art galleries, Ann Richards coming through his studio. You know, this guy sounds like the Satchel of Austin. But I don't think he can say, yeah, it's just happening everywhere. Austin is no different. It's like, I'm not sure that's true. Let's look at Teslas per capita. Let's look at let's look at right-wing, crazy libertarian podcasts per capita. You know what I mean? Let's look at bats who live under a bridge per capita. Yeah, people
that's
see.
That's a good one.
People think I don't know about Austin, but that was a good little Austin thing, wasn't it?
That is
a
good one.
Yeah.
Bats. They live under that bridge.
They live under that bridge that's fucked up. Keep Austin weird.
Yeah.
You know what they should say? Keep Austin batty. That's funny. That's really funny. Everyone should be laughing right now because that's a very clever bumper
sticker.
Keep
Austin batty.
Because then batty can mean weird and then also the bats. I expect everyone listening to this podcast to be guffawing right now. Guffawing.
The only thing Austin has going for it right now is its skyline. I mean, not the only thing. That's a great thing that it's got going for it.
You like the Austin skyline?
I like the Austin skyline. I like some of these buildings they're building. I don't like these parking podiums that they have. But I got to say it.
John, you and I have a high school friend who lives in Austin. And I've stayed with her the last couple times I've been to Austin.
No idea.
Great visits.
Who is this?
I'll give you a hint. Her mom was my piano teacher. That's a hint. And I think she's left Austin. I think she lives in Rhode Island now. Very interesting, much to consider, because she's been in Austin for like more than 20 years. So interesting.
I think people they build these stories in their head and they're like, okay, I bought this house in Austin and it cost $300,000 and now it's worth $1.8 million and I'm going to sell it and I'm going to leave Austin and talk about how bad it is. And the truth is, you're telling yourself that and you just made so much money selling your house and now you're moving to Rhode Island.
Best of both worlds, because you get the property value increase that comes with a sort of post-bohemian land rush of tech bros and stuff. But then you can also walk away complaining about how the place is no longer authentic. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I feel like I've done that lots of places that I've lived. I walk out of there going, yeah, that place has no soul.
No, you haven't. You like what? When you lived in, where did you used to live? New York City? You walked away from New York City being like, yeah, the place has no soul. Come on.
No, but I did walk away with saying it was time to leave.
That's very different, though. That's not what we're talking about. It can be time
to... That's what I'm talking about.
What did you say to me?
It's what I'm talking about.
No, it's not. Just kidding.
All right, moving on.
Moving on. Tim writes in, I started listening to this podcast after watching Dicktown and hearing Judge John Hodgman mention the election profit makers. From what I can tell, I'm about the same age as you guys. I lived in North Carolina from 6th through 12th grade, so the way you guys talk and your energy reminds me of the charismatic white Southern dudes I went to high school with. I guess we'll take that.
What does that mean?
I grew up in Indiana, well, moved back there for college, go Hoosiers, and now I live in Chicago. You mentioned going to high school with Josh Stein, the Democratic candidate for governor in Chapel Hill, at Chapel Hill High School. Now, to be clear, everybody, we're going to emphasize this again. Josh Stein was a couple years. Was he ahead of us or behind us?
No, he's older than us. So we were not in high school with Josh Stein, but we went to the same high school.
Anyway, Tim continues. I was reading an article about Mark Robinson. In parentheses, he adds, wow, what a shitbag that guy is. And the article said that he grew up in Greensboro. So Tim says, I lived in Greensboro.
The Gate City.
So I looked up what high school Mark Robinson went to, and he went to Grimsley, my high school. When I read Grimsley, I was like, that is a name I have not heard in
a while.
35 plus years. I forgot
it's
about
a great
Grimsley.
School. I think Danny Manning also went to Grimsley.
I looked up my yearbook, and he wasn't in it. He might have graduated the year before I started because he's 3 years older than me. Still, it's kind of funny that you guys went to high school with Josh Stein, and I went to the high school of his opponent. He says, don't hold that against Grimsley, though. It was a good school. Tim, who's on a roll, continues. I also love Skylines, he writes.
Man, if he loves Skylines, you know why he probably loves Skylines so much?
Why?
Because he lived in Greensboro.
Why?
It has one of the worst Skylines ever.
Oh, shit. So he was Skyline starved. He was starved for a good Skyline.
Yeah. Absolutely.
When I was dating my wife, he says, I lived in Champaign, Illinois, about 150 miles south of Chicago, and she lived in Chicagoland. So when I would drive up to see her, I would joke that I was using her for her Skyline. Wow, you like that joke.
Relatable. Okay. That's awesome.
Okay. John. Okay. Oh, God. Tim continues. Also, I grew up an Indiana Hoosier, and I moved to North Carolina in 1983. I was a huge Indiana basketball fan as a kid. Here's some college hoops trivia for John. Which team ended Michael Jordan's career at UNC? As a Northern transplant, let's not finish that.
Does he really think that I don't know this?
I don't know what he's talking about. He mentions Bobby Knight. I don't.
Yeah, Bobby Knight, the coach at Indiana.
The chair-throwing coach at Indiana who died, what, a couple years ago?
Yeah, that's right.
The king of the red V-neck sweater.
Yeah, total SOB.
He kind of looked like he could have been in the White Stripes with his color palette because he had really white hair and really red sweaters. I wonder
so if... In 1984, UNC had one of the greatest teams they've ever had. They were number one in the country the entire year. You had Michael Jordan. You had Kenny Smith. You had Brad Daugherty. You had Sam Perkins. I mean, this is the greatest Carolina team of all time. And they lost in the Sweet 16 to Indiana.
Mm.
Dan Dockich famously shut down Michael Jordan, as he liked to say. So, yes, I remember that. It's the last time that I cried about a sporting event.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
My parents made me go to bed, and I didn't get to watch the game, and I came down for breakfast, and I guess I was in sixth grade at this point, and my dad said, John, the Tar Heels lost last night. And I thought he was being sarcastic. And he was like, no, seriously, they lost. I was pretty happy.
Wow, you really cried?
I don't think right then, but yeah.
The feelings caught up to you.
Yeah, later on that day.
Grief.
Yeah, that was a painful loss.
That's really the last time you've cried about a sporting event?
Yeah.
Huh.
When else do you think I would cry about it?
I don't know. Other frustrating losses. I could see you getting frustrated and tearing up.
No, I think you don't cry that much after age 12.
Wow. Now we're about to get into it. This could become a very interesting conversation.
Just start pushing stuff down.
Name.
Oh, I've definitely been upset about sporting events, but I haven't.
Wait,
cried.
Are you saying you don't cry about sports after age 12, or you don't cry about anything after age 12?
I think you cry less after age 12.
Hmm. I don't know. I think my life has been harder post age 12 than pre age 12, so I think I've probably cried more. Although I probably am injuring myself less, and I think a lot of crying when you're a kid is injuries, right? Well, first, let's talk about this, guys. First, when you're a baby, you cry when you're sleepy, you cry when you're hungry, you cry when you're angry. You're just crying all the time because you don't have words to express anything, right? Isn't that what psychology is about? Let's assume that's true. So let's say that as a baby, you cry a lot. Then in elementary school, I think maybe you cry when you get in a fight or you cry. Injury, I think, is a big way that you cry, right? Assuming you are in a healthy and safe household otherwise, right?
Or you cry if someone says something mean to you.
Yeah, when you're getting bullied or something, right?
Right.
Then from age 20 to 40, you don't cry. And if you are crying, something's seriously wrong in your life. And then after age 40, you should be crying like every week.
Yeah, I cry more now.
Yeah, you should be crying your balls off these days. Your balls
Jesus. Jesus.
Oh, you should be crying laughing listening to this wonderful podcast. All right. John, let's end. Credits, please.
So he says that both UNC and Indiana were huge basketball powerhouses in the 80s. That's true. You know, Indiana won the national championship in 1981 against Carolina. Carolina came back in 1982 and won it. And then Indiana won it in 1987. Keith Smart hitting a shot with about 7 seconds to go against Syracuse. So this guy saying, I've got some trivia for John.
Wow, I see.
About Indiana.
Yeah.
I know all that stuff.
Hey, I've got some cool trivia about American history. Did you know George Washington was the name of the first president? That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's pulling some of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't really count as trivia.
Yeah. I own collegehoops.com. I am College Hoops. I know all this stuff.
Wow. Big talk from Mr. Collegehoops.com. All right, goodbye.
Election Profit Makers is an independent production. We welcome your support on Patreon at patreon.com/electionprofitmakers. And if you sign up for Patreon, you'll receive some wonderful EPM stickers in the mail. You'll also get an invite cord to our private Discord. Send your election prediction questions, skyline requests, bird recordings to contact@electionprofitmakers.com. And if you want to advertise with us, email contact@electionprofitmakers.com. Goodbye.
Goodbye.